Hi, good afternoon, everybody. This is Lori Smetanka, the Director of the Ombudsman Resource Center, and welcome to our call today where we'll be talking about the new QAPI program. This call is for State Long-Term Care Ombudsman. We're delighted to have today Alice Bonner, who's the Director of the Division of Nursing Homes at CMS, who's going to be giving you an update and a status report on where QAPI is at this point. We're going to hear from Alice, and then we're going to open the lines and have some communication and dialogue and question and answers. After Alice Bonner has presented, we'll also be hearing from Alice Hett, who attended a CMS briefing on QAPI probably about 6 weeks ago or so, and is going to share some thoughts that she came away from that briefing with. We're also going to hear from Patty Ducaye just very briefly, who's going to talk about a training she held for her staff in Texas on this issue, and then open for dialogue and question and answers with some other CMS staff who are also joining us today on the call. Debbie Lyons and Israel and Kathleen are all joining us from CMS today as well. So welcome to you all. And Alice, I'm going to turn the call over to you and move the screen. You can begin your presentation. Just tell me when to move forward, and we'll get started.
Terrific. Well, thank you, Lori, and thanks to everyone who's on the call today. And we will be recording a call, as Lori said, so that if you have other folks who you think would be interested in the information, please share that along. So you should just have the title slide up there right now, Nursing Home QAPI, and the date for today. I will share with you that Debbie, Israel, Kathy, and I will also be sharing some slides that we presented at our stakeholder meeting, the one that Lori and Alice and some other folks attended here in Baltimore. We were hoping that you would also find the comments useful, and it includes some overview remarks from Thomas Hamilton, who's the director, the group director here in Survey and Certification, and others. So we'll look forward to your thoughts and comments, and just really want to say on behalf of all of us here how critical we believe the role of the ombudsman is, the role of the ombudsman, the role of the advocates in helping residents and families and their representatives as well be involved in QAPI, learn how to become involved in QAPI. And so we are going to talk a little bit about that today and really encourage in the question and answers today hearing from you and brainstorming with you about things that you think would work to help us with that. So, Lori, if you go to the next slide, it just says that today's agenda is going to include, you know, some opening remarks, and we'll talk about the demonstration project, the national rollout, the role of the ombudsman programs, and then questions and dialogue and wrap-up. So on the next slide, we talk about our description of what is QAPI. And we've broken it down here into both QA and PI because it's really the combination of those two principles. So they're complementary approaches to quality management, and they differ in a couple of key ways. So if we go to the next slide, it talks about QA being a process of meeting quality standards and assuring that care reaches an acceptable level, so quality assurance. And nursing homes typically are doing some quality assurance right now, you know, when they're setting thresholds to comply with regulations, when they're looking back at something that happened on a survey. All of that is sort of backward-looking, and in another couple of slides we'll show you a little bit more what we mean by that. Whereas performance improvement, which is also sometimes just referred to as quality improvement, is proactive, it's forward-looking, and it's a continuous study of processes with the intent to prevent or decrease problems. So performance improvement or quality improvement looks globally and comprehensively at areas and opportunities where an organization can test new approaches to fixing underlying problems and look at the causes, the root causes of persistent and systematic problems or systemic problems. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go through. So on the next slide is a little chart, a comparison chart that may be helpful to you in teaching people and explaining these differences between quality assurance and performance improvement. So, you know, what's the motivation? Well, with quality assurance, it's very often measuring compliance with standards, whereas with performance improvement, the motivation is this continuous learning process, improving, learning, working together to meet standards. The way we do it in quality assurance is by inspection and review, which is backward-looking, and with PI, it's prevention and it's planning ahead. The attitude sometimes, and these are some broad generalizations here, but historically, quality assurance has been something that's required. You must have a QA&A committee. That's in the regulations. And that sometimes makes organizations defensive, whereas performance improvement is something that people are motivated to do, they're inspired to do, they're doing it because they've chosen to do it, and it's proactive. And the focus with quality assurance is sometimes on outliers, so the exceptions, the bad apples, or individuals. Whereas with performance improvement, we're looking at systems. We're looking at processes of care throughout organizations. And again, the scope with quality assurance is very often on an individual provider. What did that nurse do in that situation? As opposed to performance improvement, what is the system that we have to support nurses for medication administration, for example, so systems-based. And the responsibility with quality assurance has historically been the QA&A committee has been just a few people, sometimes just the leadership, whereas performance improvement or with QAPI, when we put them all together at the end, is really everyone in the organization. It's not bound by, you know, we're in the nursing department, so we're the people responsible for patient falls. You know, what we've learned about, I'm just using falls as an example. What we've learned about falls prevention is everybody has a role in falls prevention, and some of you have shared stories from your facilities, and we've heard from others as well. Sometimes it is the maintenance person who notices, you know, wheelchair maintenance being an issue. Sometimes it's the housekeeper noticing that certain residents are unsteady on their feet when they're in the room, et cetera. So, you know, QAPI, when you put it all together, is everyone is involved throughout the organization, not just a couple of departments, and particularly the people closest to the residents, the CNAs, the activities assistants, and others are absolutely critical. And it cannot be paying lip service to that concept. It's got to be real. So the meetings that are held around QAPI issues on a particular unit or throughout the facility must be attended by nursing assistants and other people and must be open and available to to residents and families. Now, I'm not talking about a QA&A meeting where there's, you know, protected information that's discussed. We know that that would not be someplace where ombudsmen or families would be. But I'm imagining one of the things ombudsmen could do in your role is talk with the administrator or the director of nurses or other leadership about maybe having some meetings about QAPI more generally and how ombudsmen would be involved, how families would be involved. So not talking about specific cases, obviously no protected information, but in the facility, what is that facility doing with QAPI? How can the ombudsman be involved, et cetera? So, Lori, on the next slide, we have a description of what we're calling QAPI Together, which is a data-driven, proactive approach to improving the quality of life, care, and services in nursing homes. And the activities of QAPI involve members at all levels of the organization, as we just said, identifying opportunities for improvement, addressing gaps in systems and processes, developing and implementing an improvement or corrective plan, and then continuously monitoring the effectiveness of those interventions. And the reason for the continuous monitoring is things change over time. Clinical practice standards change, the ownership of the facility might change, the staff might change, and so the continuous approach with QAPI is really something that's very fundamental to this program. So on the next slide, People do frequently ask, how is QAPI going to be different from QANA? And the first thing to say is we are working with our colleagues here at CMS on the regulation itself. So some of this we cannot really say in great detail because it will be specified much more in the regulation. But some of the things that we're looking at are the committee structure. So that could be something where, for example, right now, under the QANA committee, it requires a physician. So that could be any physician who's practicing in the facility. Under QAPI, it could be that will continue, or it might be that the medical director would have some sort of role with QAPI that would be explained more. And again, we have not gotten to the point where any of those kinds of things are being discussed further than just, you know, ideas being put out there. We asked for ideas from our stakeholders, including the ombudsman, including the advocacy community, and all of that's been very helpful. And, of course, when the QAPI rule does go into the Federal Register as an NPRM, we would strongly encourage, and I know all of you, I heard Robin on the phone, Robin Grant, and I know many of you will help us by providing your comments and helping us to brainstorm once we get the draft out there into the Federal Register. So, again, committee structure would be something that will be something we'll want to think about with you, reviewing complaints and concerns and how that's processed, conducting audits, and QAPI will go beyond QANA in terms of this prospective approach I've been talking about, and requiring a comprehensive plan. What we know is in the statute that we can, you know, certainly share is every facility will be required to have a QAPI plan in place 1 year after promulgation of the rule. So that's different than what we've got right now with QANA, and we know that in general this greater involvement of all of the staff, the residents and the families is something we're talking about quite a bit, and this focus on performance improvement projects and on systems. So those are all things that are in discussion. On the next slide, you see the five elements, and these I think by now many of you are quite familiar with. Element number one is the design and scope, which again says it's not just about one or two departments. It's got to be facility-wide. It's got to include all the departments, and the scope is really very broad, including all staff. The second element, and these are not numbered in a particular order, and they're certainly not numbered in terms of order of importance because these are all really critical elements. But the second one, governance and leadership, deserves some special mention here because a fundamental difference between what we do now with QANA and what we're going to be doing with QAPI is this focus on leadership and governance. And if you are familiar in your work with the hospitals and the work on hospital safety and quality over the last 10 years since the IOM report To Err Is Human came out, you know that governance and leadership are absolutely critical to the oversight of quality and safety in any healthcare institution. So we've learned quite a bit from hospitals. We've seen up in what we now call the C-suites with the CEOs and the CMOs that their involvement out on the units, talking to staff, learning the names of frontline staff, being really involved with data, not just, you know, having a report that sits on their desk, but really managing with data, understanding what the data means, understanding what it takes to make meaningful improvements in quality of care and quality of life using that data. Those are the kinds of principles that QAPI is really looking at in that second element with governance and leadership. Element three is feedback, data systems, and monitoring. And one of the things that I would say about all of the elements is that if you work with different provider types, and I think you all are pretty much focused on nursing homes, but, you know, some of you may have colleagues who also work in hospitals or ESRD or hospice, and these five elements may be phrased a little bit differently, but they are really all the same fundamentally in terms of what they're getting at. And so element three we call feedback, data systems, and monitoring, and it's what I was just talking about, that there are systems to monitor quality and safety and provide feedback back to frontline staff, back to all staff, back to ombudsman, back to families and residents, and that those systems are sound and are based on data that can be analyzed and collected and shared back with staff as well. So we anticipate much more in QAPI in terms of using data and monitoring systems. Element 4 is performance improvement projects, and there's been a lot of work in the pilot to use and teach facilities how to conduct these small projects in many different sectors and areas, and use that to go back to improve quality and safety. And then finally, element 5 is so important, that systematic analysis and systemic action throughout the entire organization, and that focus on systems, that when an error happens, it is most often not because of something a nurse did or a nursing assistant did or a doctor did. It is something that could be part of the system, and we want to see if the systems can be designed better for safer and better quality of care. So on the next slide begins a short series that I just wanted to briefly share with you that Thomas Hamilton did at the stakeholder meeting. And I got to say, I do not have his folksy Midwestern charm by any stretch of the imagination, but we did want to share with you his commitment. Thomas has been a real champion of QAPI across many provider types. So just to give you a little background, and I will go through these briefly, but on the next slide, the historical perspective with CMS expectations in the process, as the survey and certification group here, very often the relationship that we have with facilities is, you know, the surveyors go in and there are some citations and the facility is saying, you know, oh man, you know, we got cited for this, and it feels very punitive. And so that's, you know, Thomas's depiction of sort of what the reaction is. But on the next slide, he talks about the CMS expectation and the process. You know, we are the regulators. We do have to go into facilities, and we do conduct enforcement and site deficiencies. So we can't get away from the, you know, oh, man, you know, you went in and we got cited for this. But by the same token, with QAPI, what we have is the opportunity for all staff in nursing homes to be involved with us collaboratively after the process that we, you know, must engage in, so that everybody is working together to get to yes. And getting to yes means getting to figuring out this continuous process for ongoing improvement. So again, on the next slide, you know, Thomas's abridged version of how things are with CMS regulations, the basics are, you know, that people interpret what we do as that we come in and we say, do this and don't do that. And he gave some examples from nursing homes of the different regulations that are broken down here into the different 180 or so tags. And then on the next slide, again, continuing with his abridged version, the Old Testament, you know, the basics, don't, you know, do this and don't do that. But beyond the basics, this New Testament with QAPI is that we want people to learn. We want nursing homes to become learning organizations, and we want them to become even better, no matter how good they are. We want them to have internal governance and internal quality champions, and that's the only way this is really going to work. It's not going to work just with the Old Testament of us coming in and saying, do this and don't do that. It's really got to be all of these things. So then on the next slide, he continues on with the QAPI requirement and, you know, expectations for outcomes, so that we can be looking at quality outcomes, whether it's measures on Nursing Home Compare, studies that researchers may do. But we're really evaluating how this new QAPI approach and this fundamental transformation is really going to lead us to better outcomes, and how we'll know when we get there. So on the next slide, Thomas reminds us that we have had QAPI requirements and CMS regulations in other provider types, hospitals, organ transplant, dialysis, et cetera. And so, you know, this is just now coming to nursing homes. But what's been really nice about that is Debbie, Israel, Kathleen, myself, and our colleagues here have been able to learn from our other team members in the other provider types. And they've really learned quite a bit, and it's been, you know, incredibly valuable to have those conversations. On the next slide, I think, you know, Thomas conveyed very well that the opportunity in long-term care is for us collectively to communicate that everyone makes a difference. This is really democratizing improvement and saying it's not about the administrator, it's not about the DON, and it's not about CMS coming in and saying, you know, there's a QAPI regulation now, so you've got to do it this way. It's about staff, residents, ombudsmen, families, everyone getting involved, actively involved, not just, again, the lip service. So we want to develop tools that everybody can use, and we value feedback from all of you, from residents and families. And one of the things that Don Berwick, when he was here, shared with us is never worry alone. And so one of the things that I think, you know, we spend a lot of time, speaking on behalf of our team, we spend a lot of time here worrying about quality and safety and worrying about making sure that QAPI, you know, gets up and running and is effective. But we appreciate the dialogue that we have with all of you because we don't want to worry alone. We don't want you to worry alone. We want to be working on this together. And then, you know, the reference to PDSA cycles, Plan, Do, Study, Act, sometimes Plan, Do, Check, Act, if it's PDCA, you know, providing tools that everybody can use about this. And then, you know, finally, we know that many of you on the phone have colleagues in the Pioneer Network and several other organizations that are working on culture change in nursing homes and many quality of life issues. And QAPI is and culture change are very much mutually reinforcing and together will help us, I think, improve quality of life. So on the next slide, just a few final adages from Thomas and some of the people he likes to quote. You know, we know that every system is perfectly designed to achieve the results that it achieves. And so that means if a system is too complex and fragmented and not well designed, then we're going to get outcomes that aren't good. And so we need to work on those things. On the next slide, you know, if we lose the patient, we don't lose the lesson. And what that means is bad things will happen despite all of our efforts. There will be errors. There will be, you know, adverse events. And what's important is that we don't just say, you know, that something bad happened and walk away, that we take the opportunity to learn, do a root cause analysis, talk to all the people involved, figure out what went wrong so that we can prevent it from going wrong the next time. And then on the next slide, in addition to those, PDSA is the growth of knowledge through making changes and then reflecting on the consequences of those changes. And, you know, we are all so busy in our lives and our work that it, you know, that moment of reflection just, I know for me personally, it eludes me on most days. And, you know, we have to really try our best to get back to that. And then the final point, that measurement is only a handmaid to improvement, but improvement cannot happen without it. And again, from Don Berwick, who was our administrator for a while, just keeping that in mind. So with that, we now move into the next slide, which is going to talk a little bit about the pilot and share with you the results of the pilot. And this work was led by Rosalie Kane. And the next slide, the acknowledgement is all the other people on the team, Robert Kane and the folks in Minnesota, the Stratus Health team, et cetera. So on the next slide, the demo fast facts or quick facts, the demo involved 17 volunteer nursing homes in 4 states, and it was a 2-year project, so it's still ongoing. And it uses the 5-element framework we just talked about. The nursing homes are receiving a great deal of technical assistance from Stratus, some on-site, most of it virtual. And the nursing homes had access to tools and resources that we've been developing along with the other folks on the team. And the nursing homes were organized into a learning collaborative. So they shared strategies. They talked with one another. And there will be a systematic evaluation focused on this early implementation. So on the next slide, it just briefly is telling you that the nursing homes for the pilot were selected to have a variety of characteristics so that we could be able to say we had some small and some large homes and different star ratings, some one-star homes. We didn't have one star, I don't think. It was some two-star to five-star homes, et cetera. And the states were also selected so that we had some QIS and some traditional states. And we're reminded that the homes, implemented QAPI in a variety of ways, but that this is not meant to be a generalizable sample. So it's not the kind of research design where you would say, we're going to have statistically significant results. It's more qualitative. What did it take to implement these tools and resources? What did people say about them? What did they think about them? How can we learn and modify some of these tools and resources as we go forward with our national rollout? So, again, it's designed to give us some input and insights into what it will be like when we use these tools on a national scale. The next slide, the general conclusions. In less than a year, 16 out of the 17 homes were able to implement many of the QAPI principles. So most of them had made some sort of progress with QAPI plans. 16 had one or more of the performance improvement plans, projects completed or in process. And the nursing home with the slowest start, again, here's where if you lose the patient, you don't lose the lesson. This was a home that had a lot of issues, a lot of challenges, and I think they were not able to do a lot of the things that other nursing homes were able to do, but we learned what a nursing home like that is up against and what it may take to be able to implement QI in that type of setting. So we did learn even from that. On the next slide, the factors associated with implementation, there's was just a lot of variation. So it was not, the success was not predicted by the five-star rating, by the degree of culture change and person-centered care, although those homes did seem to have a bit of a head start, and in some cases it seemed helpful. And the extent of, corporate resources regarding quality, the corporations were often very strongly committed to some of the previous systems like CQI, continuous quality improvement, or TQM, total quality management. If you've been around in nursing as long as I have, you remember both of those. And there were some things that they had available, but they were not always readily usable for individual homes. So, again, we learned a lot about corporate culture and ways that we may want to think about making tools and resources available. So that was helpful. On the next slide, the team is sharing the greatest challenges using data systematically to get a comprehensive overview of performance. Again, we talk a lot about dashboards, but, really turning the data into meaningful information is something that takes a while if you are not an organization that's done that historically. Building in, systematic resident and family input, structuring the performance improvement projects, applying root cause analysis. Root cause analysis and critical thinking are two phrases we use all the time, very casually, but they have very specific meanings. And so really doing a root cause analysis turns out to be something that not a lot of facilities are as familiar with as you might think. And so we're developing these tools and resources to really share with people what that really means and how to do it. Using systems thinking and quality efforts, breaking out of silos with disciplines and departments, et cetera. The next slide, completing the pilot, we're going to be doing the final learning collaboratives in 2012-2013. The research team is going to be analyzing the data and, providing feedback. And the lessons learned are already being applied to the QAPI website that CMS is developing. So with that takes us to our next slide and our final series of slides, which is about the QAPI national rollout. And Israel and Debbie and Kathleen and others have been working very, very hard on this next phase. So the first phase was, the planning and development in 2010. The second phase was testing and further development of the tools and resources through the pilot and also the first wave of our questionnaire, and then phase three, beginning now in the fall of 2012, is the initial rollout of just some of the foundational materials. So all of the tools and resources that we've been working on are not going to go up on the CMS website because the demonstration homes are still helping us to learn about them and test them, but there's some that have been, vetted through that system that we do feel are ready for prime time, ready for more of the nursing homes across the country to start testing and figuring out how they want to use it. So that's where we're at with the current phase three, as well as the questionnaire we'll talk about and some of the surveyor and consumer materials that we're starting to develop. So the next slide, just very briefly about the questionnaire. We administered it in two waves. The first one has already gone out. The next one will be probably in the summer or early fall of 2013. And as you probably know by now, the purpose was to get a baseline and figure out where facilities are now so that we can, again, measure some of the improvement and some of the implementation as we go forward. The next slide shares some very, very good news, which is we had 75% response rate due to a lot of hard work by our team here and our contractor at Apt Associates. So, and many people out in the field who took the time to fill out the survey, which took at least 20 to 30 minutes. So, you know, people are interested in this. They're sharing information, which has been really helpful. In terms of the next slide, the website that we're working on very diligently right now is for people to come to CMS and be able to learn more about QAPI, learn more about us, tools and resources, and there will be some featured videos. So on the next slide, you see that the initial rollout of the website is designed to set the groundwork, help people see where they are, and also that implementing QAPI is essential. It's not just enough to understand it. So that's what we're hoping the website and, to some extent, the questionnaire will do. The next slide is a screenshot of what we're working on now from CMS.gov. So working on something that would look like this, bring you to the home page, the featured video. The next slide will show you, again, some more of the content we're working on for the website. So it will give you the definitions, the background, et cetera, and you'll be able to click around to get to the information that you need. On the next slide, it says QAPI at a glance, and that is our overview 25-pager that gives administrators, directors of nurses, ombudsmen, anybody, an idea of soup to nuts, what is this, you know, QAPI transformational change that we're talking about and how can I get there? So the next slide shows you the table of contents from QAPI at a glance, and you can see it's very action-oriented. What is this guide going to do for me? What's different about QAPI versus QANA? What are the action steps I need to take? If I'm an administrator or a director of nurses or an ombudsman, what do I need to do to get there? And then the next slide is a screenshot of the self-assessment. So that's one of the foundational tools. So that allows a facility, very much like the questionnaire, to actually figure out where they are at this point in time so they know what their baseline is. The next slide talks about the purpose and of the guiding principles worksheet. And so this is, again, another tool that's going to be one of the basic tools to describe how the program can address clinical care, quality of life, resident choice, and some guidelines for performance improvement teams, getting them up and running. So the next slide is just the screenshot of developing these principles, and to let you know, that will be another document that will be on the initial CMS website rollout. And then on the next slide, the plan outline. So as we said earlier, every facility must have a QAPI plan. And, Lori, if you go to the next slide, it just shows you the screenshot of here are some basic ways to get your plan started, help your organization get started. On the next slide, it talks about the featured video. And, again, there is a business case for QAPI. There are ways in which if you are a for-profit nursing home, it will help your business in terms of reducing turnover, in terms of referrals to your facility, in terms of satisfaction scores, nursing home compare measures, a whole bunch of things. And so we have a video that talks about that. We have real residents in our video that talk about why QAPI is important to them, perspectives of providers out there, et cetera. The next slide, the phase three, again, just goes over the next wave of the questionnaire, the provider materials. The consumer materials, we would be happy to continue to have feedback from all of you. You've been a key stakeholder in the development of those materials, and that will be something we have not done a whole lot with yet, but now is certainly the time that we're wanting to make sure we have the materials and get your feedback on those. And I know Rosalie and her team are have been working with Lori and with Robin and others, and will continue to do that. So maybe we'll get some more ideas on that today. And then surveyor materials. So, you know, we are already starting to work on what the surveyor worksheets will look like, because it's a major part of this work to help surveyors understand QAPI so that they know how to survey for it in a way that is really meaningful and accurate. The next slide, provider materials. So there will be both process tools and topic tools eventually, and those are, as I mentioned, they will not all be on the initial rollout of the website. And CMS, just by the way, is not mandating certain tools. So we're not going to say for pressure ulcers, every nursing home in the country must use this particular tool to oversee quality and safety with pressure ulcers. We will provide tools for some of the high risk, some of the major categories, but we will also allow facilities to use their own tools as well. In terms of the next slide, the online learning sessions, you know, these will be ongoing with phase three, and will provide an opportunity for people to learn about all aspects of QAPI. So the audience will be nursing home staff, you know, all nursing home staff and caregivers, and there may be ones for other specific stakeholders as well. So again, it would be valuable to us to hear your input. Which of these types of calls would you want to be a part of, and which of these types of topics would it be more useful to have in addition, perhaps, separate calls like this, where you can address specific issues, where we can really kind of brainstorm around ombudsman-specific issues. The next slide shows you a little bit more about what the provider materials, what it will look like on the website. So, for example, Jane Peterson, who's a wonderful geriatrician in Minnesota, did a root cause analysis session, and so that webinar will be, you'll be able to connect to that, and all of the webinars through the pilot have been archived, so all of that work has been saved. On the next slide, it shows you the CMS QAPI website and what that looks like and how to get there. On the next slide, the surveyor materials I've already covered. We are looking at surveyor training needs. We're looking at the worksheet, and we'll be going from there. And then, as I said, in terms of consumer materials, hopefully on the Q&A session here in just a moment or so, you know, you can help us understand what kinds of materials will be most effective in empowering and engaging people. You know, consumers are all age groups, and they're all across the country, rural areas, urban areas. You know, do people prefer online types of materials? In some cases, are print materials better? Do webinars work? Maybe we can provide, you know, materials that people can use in their facilities. So maybe people want to have materials they can hand out in their facilities. These are a lot of things we've done with Advancing Excellence over the last several years, and I know many of you have expertise as well, so we'll be looking forward to hearing your thoughts on that. The next slide, you know, asks the very important question, you know, what role can ombudsman programs play in QAPI implementation? And for me, I always think it's about asking questions. You guys out there ask the hard questions, and you help facilities by asking them the questions. When I was in Massachusetts, worked very closely with the ombudsman program there, and just, you know, had a great experience being able to work to train ombudsmen and also to have them go out and then know what questions to ask. So asking the administrator, you know, share with me what you've done with QAPI in terms of, you know, how you're out on the floors talking to staff, how you're getting feedback from families and residents, you know, because you guys might be a best practice home, so it'd be great for us to share that with, you know, other homes. Asking questions about, gosh, how are you using information from your resident satisfaction surveys, or your family satisfaction surveys in your QAPI processes? Help me understand how you're using that information. Those kinds of questions, and also, you know, asking families and residents when you're talking with them, do you know about QAPI? Do you know what it is? Do you know how it makes a difference with your quality of care and quality of life? I think those kinds of things are really terrific things that ombudsmen can do. So in terms of how ombudsmen can prepare, I would say staying engaged and involved with groups like Consumer Voice, other advocacy organizations, staying engaged with your state ombudsman leadership and, you know, the federal ombudsman program as well, Becky Kurtz, Louise Ryan. You know, we've got regular and ongoing calls and conversations with them. They're very knowledgeable. We try to keep them updated, and they keep us updated. So those are all ways that I think ombudsmen can help to prepare as we roll out, you know, consumer materials and these other things as well. And it will accelerate once the QAPI rule gets into the Federal Register, because it'll be a year from the final promulgation of the final rule that will be really on a much faster track, although we're encouraging people to get very involved right now. So the final slide is just, you know, sharing that this is a transformation. This is not a program. It is not a one-off. It is the fundamental way that we transform the lives of nursing home residents through continuous attention to quality of care and quality of life. And, you know, again, you know, many thanks to all of the work that you're all doing out there on behalf of this transformative process that we really believe is going to make a huge difference, as you have been doing with culture change for so long, and we see those programs as really, really synergistic. So with that, and having, as usual, talked way too long, I will turn it back over to Lori or the folks there to open up the lines for questions.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks so much, Alice, for a really informative and thorough presentation on this process. When we were thinking about the call for today, we wanted not only to give you an update and overview of where things stood, but also wanted to give you an opportunity to think about how you can start positioning your programs in your states for most effective involvement and engagement with the implementation of this process, and really think about what your roles are and also how you will be talking to your local ombudsmen and volunteers about the implementation of this process. And so I'm going to open the lines in just a second. Before we start with specific questions, I wanted to give Alice Hett just a couple minutes to talk about some of the things she took away from the briefing, since she has had some additional time to think about really what this means for her program. And Patty's going to tell us about a training that she held for her staff, and we will have some dialogue after that. So I'm going to open the lines now. All the lines will be unmuted. If you have a mute button on your cell phone, on your phones, I would encourage you to use those if you're not speaking. If you don't, you can press *6 to mute your line and *7 to unmute. So I'm going to unmute.
The conference has been muted. The conference has been unmuted.
Okay. And Alice Hett, your line should be unmuted. And do you want to just give us a couple thoughts that you took away from the briefing with CMS?
Yes, absolutely. And I want to thank CMS, because in the stakeholders meeting, they not only included me as a representative of NAESOP, but they included a representative of NALCO and the Ombudsman Center and ACL. And so it was good to have so many ombudsman-type folks at the table. I just have four comments that I've been thinking about related to this initiative. And the first is that the Consumer Voice, and now and in its Nickner days, has advocated that facilities focus on quality of care and quality of life on an ongoing basis and not just be reactive to a survey. And I think this initiative formalizes that intent, that it gives facilities the opportunity to be working round the clock, day in, day out, to make improvements. So that, from my perspective, is a really good thing. My second observation is that here in Maryland, and I hope in other places, I think as ombudsmen, we really need to be thinking about how our residents and their family members and ombudsmen involved in meaningful ways. a lot of quality initiatives. There's some strange feedback here, but where the involvement hasn't been meaningful. It's been filling out a simple survey that may or may not really get at the questions that residents have. And I would just encourage you all to look at a wonderful video that Terra Nova put out and that all the ombudsmen were sent some years ago called Residents Have the Answers, because that truly includes meaningful ways that residents can have involvement in quality improvement. And it has been also put on YouTube, I believe. My third comment is that QAPI clearly is not new. I've had some facilities complain because they're having to do something new. That's absolutely not true. This is what the industry, their associations say that they've been promoting for years and years in their quality initiatives. It's part of advancing excellence. It's what the QIOs are working on. So facilities that have been doing this, it's not a new thing. And I don't think that's a good excuse. And the last thing that I want to say is I've been trying to think how in Maryland we can work to make sure that the measures and that the things that are going to be looked at are things that are meaningful to the residents themselves and not just something that the facility thinks they need to address. At the stakeholders conference, there were representatives there from the dental health community saying, you know, we have to look at oral hygiene and how that impacts all of quality of care and quality of life. The activity directors were saying we need to look at activities. Other folks were talking about how do we really look at staffing and consistent assignments. So I think that's one of our challenges, is how do we get facilities to look at things that are really going to make a difference to residents, and how can we get residents to be a part of that discussion. Thanks, Lori.
Thanks, Alice. And Patty, can you just talk about the training that you held for your staff recently and how you involved them and why you thought it was important to do that? And before she starts, the materials that Alice has shared with us in terms of her PowerPoint today and the materials that Patty had for her training are all available on the NORC website. So, Patty, are you available?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead. Thanks.
Great. So it was late August of this year where I attended a joint training with state veterans homes and surveyors, and QAPI was introduced to this small group. And a couple of ombudsmen were with me, and we talked and decided it was time to introduce this concept to ombudsmen as well. So we had an October training this year, and I pursued this with our quality improvement organization, so our QIO, and I asked them who their expert was on QAPI. And I found out that was Melody Malone, someone I've worked with before. And so we worked together to plan October training, and we gave her 3 hours with the ombudsman. And it wasn't quite enough time, but that's okay. We did well anyway. She really drove the planning process with me, and we put a lot of energy before the training into planning. So she pushed me to think about QAPI and apply it to our program, like our internal program workings, so that we could understand it better and then help facilities understand QAPI. And I really appreciate her thinking that way, because I think it helped ring true for me. So we worked together, made a lot of questions that were very ombudsman-specific, like asking questions for ombudsmen to think about, like interference with the ombudsman program by a nursing facility, or in our own organizations, leadership in our organization not understanding what an ombudsman does. And we spent about 30 or 45 minutes just on QAPI, kind of the introduction and some of what Alice Bonner gave us today. We also reviewed the 5 elements of QAPI. And then we spent the remainder of our time on root cause analysis. And we just when working with Melody, I helped her understand that that was really the heart of what we wanted to know more about, because we have been teaching that ombudsmen really look at the root cause from Sarah Hunt's training from way back, so that we can really make a change that has a lasting effect. So we spent a lot of time on root cause analysis, and we talked about human factors, execution errors, planning errors, and violations. And one of the fun things that Melody used with us is an old I Love Lucy video where she's in the chocolate factory with Ethel. And that was a lot of fun for us to watch, sort of a disaster happening that was funny. And then we had this example to look at and apply the human factors and how those contributed to the problem that happened in the chocolate factory. So that was a really effective tool with us. We liked it a lot. We practiced brainstorming together, and Ombudsman loved silent brainstorming, where we had a couple of posed questions that Melody presented, and then people just wrote on sticky notes, like post-it notes, their answer. And so there was no talking during this. It was just like 5 minutes of collecting these ideas. And we got the best ideas from this experience and things that we can really do something with, and it really helped us understand the staff ombudsman perspective on some different issues. And then by practicing it that way, they got excited about saying, oh, I can do that with a facility, you know, with an in-service training. We've covered 5 Whys, which is a tool that's going to be shared with you. And, again, we used real-life issues with the Ombudsman program and had Ombudsman work together in very small teams and just sort of dig into a problem and look at one layer and then the next layer under to look at the root cause and find the root cause. So we had a lot of fun, and we got great feedback. So I'm looking forward to our next phase. Thank you, Lori.
Great. Thank you so much, Patty. It sounded like a great training for your staff. So now we have the lines unmuted, and we're going to open it up to you all to begin asking questions. We do have a CMS staff on the line in addition to Alice Bonner. We have Debbie, Israel, and Kathleen, who are working closely with her on the QAPI project and are available to answer questions and just want to hear your thoughts and questions. So there is a small enough number on the phone that we're just going to leave the lines open, and I know that you'll all take turns, and we're ready for the first question or comment.
And I just wanted to tell my team that my other call was canceled, so I'm on as well, but they can answer all the hard questions.
Okay, great. Thanks. You're all there, right?
Yes, we're here. This is Victor Olija. It is not from Delaware. It's not a question, but maybe a comment, I think. When I look at everything, all the quality initiatives, you know, that are coming down the pipe now, I think I look at our group as the agents of change. So I think, you know, the... hello?
While you're all still thinking... Alice, okay. I know that you've been working really closely with Rosalie and the facilities, and so what kind of feedback have you been getting from the facilities about the process? Have they been accepting or some resistant?
I'll let Debbie and Israel and Kathy chime in here as well. I think the results from the pilot have been very mixed in terms of how
Hello?
You know, much. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I can hear everyone, including Victor.
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
But I don't think Lori heard him.
Yeah.
Hey, did he hear me? No, I didn't think so.
Yeah, Lori, can you hear me?
I'm going to try and unmute.
The conference
again.
Has been unmuted.
Seems we're having a bit of a technical issue. Can you,
Lori, can you hear me?
Someone needs to email Lori or text her.
My line is unmuted. Can hear me?
We are on the conference.
Please, I can't hear you.
The conference has been unmuted.
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear us, Lori?
I'm sorry. What
it looks like
is, you're
Lori,
hearing
yes.
me, but we can't hear any of you, and I don't know why that is. So I apologize for that. In your
the conference has been unmuted.
Screens, there's a chat feature down in the bottom left-hand corner. So you can hear each other, and you can hear me, but I can't hear you. There's a chat feature in the bottom left-hand corner. If you can chat some questions in, I can ask them. I am hearing some sound, but don't know where it's coming from. Okay, can someone try to, let's see, I'm hearing some sound.
Can you hear me?
Alice. Is that Alice?
Yeah.
Yes, I can hear you.
All right, well, it sounds like you can hear us again. That's pretty good.
Hey, Lori?
Yes, okay, there's Victor.
You can hear us again. Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. I don't quite know what happened.
Okay.
Victor, you were asking a question. Okay.
Yes, can everyone hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it really wasn't a question per se, as much as a comment. I said with all the initiatives, you know, advancing excellence, you know, reducing the hospitalization, things of that nature, I think, you know, what I see now is our role is becoming the real agents of change, you know, helping the facilities, administrators, families, and everybody, you know, just getting engaged to the best degree that we can so that we can facilitate the change in the best way we can. Okay, that's it.
Yeah, very good.
Thank you, Victor.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
Lori, it's Patty again. I was wondering if we could talk about the use of ombudsman data and whether ombudsman data might be useful to facilities as they are trying to look for measures to improve, you know, to show a mark in improvement.
Yes, I think that's an excellent question, Patty. And Louise, are you still on the line? I saw you on there.
Yes, I am.
Great. I know you were going to make a comment about that issue.
We were just beginning to question, beginning to maybe start exploring, is there a way that at the facility level, ombudsmen could share their complaint trends with a nursing home that might help, you know, inform their approaches with QAPI. So that's, you know, we're just kind of starting to raise the question. We haven't gotten any further than that, but you know, I think where ombudsmen have that level of data, it could be helpful.
I think that's a great point. And actually, I think we had some of this conversation. Louise is on, so she can. I think we did have some of this conversation in our call. We had a couple of calls where we got the survey agencies and the ombudsman programs together, and that's you know, that's where I think you could really get some good synergies. As well as sharing back to the facilities directly, I think that's a great idea. It doesn't really make sense that, you know, one agency is hearing complaints from one set of people and it's not, you know, that there isn't some way of sharing. They're sometimes protected, you know, it has to do with the reporting and so forth. But in general, I think the more we know and share, that's one of the QAPI principles is, you know, sharing the feedback. So I think that's a great idea. And if I were a nursing home administrator, and the ombudsman, you know, sat down and shared the information about complaints or whatnot to the extent that, again, that you can. I mean, that's part of your role. I think ombudsmen have always done that. So within the QAPI context, it just gives you that positive, forward-looking, collaborative approach where you're saying, you know, how can we turn this into something, you know, that looks like a solution?
This is Debbie Lyons also. I'd like to chime in here. I think also by kind of that type of collaboration, It kind of changes the dynamic between the facilities and the ombudsman and becomes more of we're on the same team kind of thing. I also had a thought. It might be helpful if when the ombudsman received complaints from consumers, if a couple of questions were asked, you know, did you report this already to your facility? Did they, you know, what was their response? Did they, are you aware of the facility's QAPI program or quality program? You know, that kind of thing. And that might be helpful information to the surveyors prior to them going out to do the survey. You know, not only do we have this complaint, but this was lodged to the facility, and the facility, you know, and there may be a way to try to, you know, help the surveyor in terms of, you know, determining if there was a system, a quality system, where those complaints were taken in, you know, taken in and addressed. Just a thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think there's, this is Louise again, I think there's, you know, certainly opportunity there. I suspect some of that happens already out in the field. You know, I know when I was with the Ombudsman Program, there were times when we would run facility-specific data to try to alert them to trends or problems, especially looking at were the complaints successfully resolved or not? Is that, you know, if they're not being resolved and residents aren't getting what they need, that's extra information. It's not only the complaint, but how is the facility responding to correcting that complaint?
Mm-hmm. Great point, Louise and Debbie. Other questions and comments?
This is Joe from California, and I guess I just wanted to comment on a statement that Alice made. I can certainly, you know, understand the importance of learning from our mistakes. You know, clearly, you know, you move on when you make a mistake, and you learn from that experience, and you learn what steps to take to not repeat that same mistake. But, you know, I think, you know, the choice of words about losing the patient but not losing the lesson, you know, I think we need to remember, you know, these are human beings. These are people's lives. And, you know, while we certainly want to learn what to do or what not to do to repeat something that could harm a resident, I think we need to be a little more sensitive in the choice of words and phraseology that we use.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Sure.
I agree. This is Patty. One thing that our trainer did was in describing that piece that I thought really resonated was she just explained an experience she had where someone had a pretty bad fall as the result of her actions. And she just tried to put it in the mindset of how bad she felt afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty helpful in explaining, Alice, your point that, you know, and she went into some detail, but I thought it was a nice way to put the staff in the center of the whole human experience and what a challenge it is to give care. And that, you know, I think ombudsmen can also really identify with the fact that a lot of times after a violation is found, say by regulatory, what we see is somebody gets fired for it. And
right.
Sometimes that's the appropriate answer, but a lot of times it seems so ridiculous to us.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, to what you're both speaking about, I mean, there's a whole body of literature now related to apology in medicine and, you know, how, you know, these things have been handled very often in the past, covering up things, not admitting fault. And, you know, that's been partly related to this whole punitive system. And so the sensitivity that's required that you're speaking to is very important, and the staff's response and how badly they feel is such an important part of this. And again, you know, acknowledging that and supporting them when these things do happen is critical. So I think those are very important things that ombudsman can help us do.
Absolutely.
Thank you,
Alice and Patty. Other comments and questions?
Hey, Lori.
Yes.
I just unmuted myself. I'm sorry. It took me so long to do that.
My comment is more of a sidebar, but as we're thinking about QAPI and how it can make a difference in nursing homes, I think we need to be thinking about QAPI in the assisted living arena. I personally think the culture of nursing homes are so established that it's very, very hard to change that culture. And so it's going to be very tough for QAPI to really get embedded in the nursing home culture. And I hope it happens, and it should happen. But assisted living is a newer arena. And I think there's some opportunities that we might have to encourage assisted living facilities to start using quality processes to really make a difference before that culture is so firmly established as it is in nursing homes.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Alice. That's a really good point. Other comments and questions?
Laurie, this is Joan Earhart.
Hi, Joan.
How are you? Anyway, I have, I don't know, it's not a question, it's actually a comment. You know, when I go to the nursing facilities, they feel like they're being onslaughted with all these different processes that they have to do on a separate basis. I mean, you've got your antipsychotics, you've got advancing excellence, and, you know, to me, all of these processes tie together, and it seems to me that either advancing excellence or QAPI would be the place to do all of this instead of having everything so fragmented. And I mean, I appreciate any comments because maybe I'm just on the wrong track, but I see all these different come out, and they're all basically trying to accomplish the same thing. And that
you're
better care. Yeah.
Yeah. This is Dr. Origi again. I think it goes back to the comment I made also. Yeah, you know, they are all designed to achieve similar outcomes. And I think, you know, what we need to do is, okay, if you look at the facility that is already practicing all these things, that is already doing all these things, this won't be anything new. But I think, again, when we look at it holistically, they're all designed, to achieve, same result, the highest quality of care for the residents. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say I totally agree with that comment, and we hear it a lot. You know, Debbie and Israel, Kathy hear it a lot. We are trying to send the message that you suggested, that this is not different, this is not separate. You know, QAPI is the fundamental way that it's just the way we deliver care. It's the way we run nursing homes. It's not a separate program. And, you know, all of the principles of advancing excellence, you're absolutely right. They are built into QAPI. They are the same. Using data, benchmarking, learning collaboratives, it's all the same stuff. And so it's very important that people don't feel like this is a yet another layer, yet another program, something that's being layered on. The antipsychotics initiative is a great example of something that fits beautifully within QAPI. So if you apply the principles, you know, and the individualized person-centered approach and involving families and looking at systems, if you do those basic things, the antipsychotics that are unnecessary, the rate is going to come down. So I think everything you've said resonates very much with us, and we need to keep sending that message.
Right, mm-hmm. And Alice, this is Debbie. You know, just so that everyone knows, we definitely collaborated with Advancing Excellence. We worked with them, as well as reached out to some other partners in developing some of these tools and resources for the nursing homes. And we do think that the resources that Advancing Excellence have, that the things that they have fit beautifully into the QAPI programs that we're developing.
Mm-hmm. Alice or Debbie, can you talk a little bit about how the surveyors are being instructed in this process and whether they'll be directed to look at things differently when they're in the facilities or what their relationship will be or what their expectations will be?
This is Debbie, and I'll start, Alice. Jump in and help whenever you feel like it. So, of course, With the Affordable Care Act, we were charged with developing technical assistance for nursing homes. We certainly realize that surveyors are going to need a lot of help with this because, frankly, we know that surveyors aren't really addressing systems issues identified under the QANA. That's a very, you know, that tag is not cited very frequently, and we think that the root cause of that is because they don't have a good understanding. And I actually am a former surveyor, so I know that there is a lack of understanding. So we are in the process right now. My colleague Kathy Lawrence and I are putting together a work group to begin to develop the surveyor training materials that are going to be necessary. Of course, based on some of the materials that we've already developed for the nursing homes so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel, because we think some of the learning is going to be kind of the same. You know, whether you're a provider, whether you're a surveyor, you need to understand systems thinking and how to identify when there's an issue that involves a system. So we are in the process of starting that work now. Our plan is to definitely, you know, help surveyors understand how to identify when there is a deficient practice that is impacted by an entire system, and how to identify that, how to cite it properly, how to navigate through some of the statutory requirements that, of doing the quality work, you know, such as disclosure and such. And we think with education that will help tremendously.
Debbie, this is Bev Laubert from Ohio. Could you say again which tag did you say that they're not citing much?
Well, there's the current QANA tag, Quality Assessment and Assurance, is F520.
Okay, thanks.
It's just not cited frequently. When we know that, you know, when they're citing F441, for instance, infection control, that is that's one big system, many systems that come together. And if you have a deficiency at an E level in infection control, well, you certainly should take a look at that in the quality QANA review to see if they should have identified that they had an issue.
Does the quality indicator survey direct the surveyors in that way? I know it's very data-based.
Right. There are a series of questions that kind of walks the surveyors through currently for QANA.
Okay.
Now, of course, as we proceed with the development of training and materials for surveyors for QAPI, that's absolutely one of our plans is to develop a surveyor worksheet that will kind of lead them through the steps to think critically about what they're seeing. And throughout the entire survey process, not just the last day, the last hour of the survey, okay, let's go in and ask these five questions. No, this is going to be something that we hope will take them through the entire survey process. If you have at the end of the day meeting and two surveyors have identified the same thing, or a surveyor has identified something that was an issue in the previous 2 years' annual surveys,
mm-hmm.
This is something we need to look at when we do the QAPI review.
Okay. Laura, can I ask one more question?
Please.
Sorry, I don't want to monopolize. Alice knows from a recent meeting in Ohio we're going to be putting some more emphasis on plans of correction. And so I'm wondering if this QAPI and the root cause analysis kind of small, we're actually struggling with that because we're emphasizing it's small R and A root cause, you know, not a big formal program. We don't want to intimidate people, but will this carry, this level of thinking carry over into review of plans of correction?
Well, this is Debbie. we definitely think that there's a huge room for improvement in this area. We recognize that the plans of corrections that get submitted don't fix the problem, don't fix the root causes. They primarily are in-service based, and we definitely want to move away from that. We're in the early phases of the development of those materials, but if we give the nursing home providers these foundations and help to shift their thinking from reactive to proactive, you know, systems thinking that it will happen. Well, I don't want to. It probably won't happen naturally, but we're going to kind of push that and nudge that along as well, because, you know, we are also, again, this is an area that we expect that we're going to do a lot of surveyor training, so that they're not accepting plans of correction that are based on in service.
Great.
You know, that the plan of correction that gets accepted, that you can see that, you know, yeah, you know, they're going to do a root cause analysis and a lot, you know, but again, we have to, this is still the, you know, we have a lot of work to do, but that
yeah.
is definitely our thinking.
Thank you. That gives me great hope. I'm excited.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, good. Okay. My fingers are crossed.
Yeah.
Other questions and comments?
Thank you, Lori. This was helpful to me.
Lori, glad to know that. Yes.
Another thought I was having was that maybe Ombudsman would be able to actually deliver training to staff, and maybe it's critical thinking skills and, you know, getting at root cause analysis, you know, from a basic level. What do other people think about Ombudsman as trainers of these concepts, and, you know, what's your reaction to that idea?
Well, this is Debbie again. I think that's a very interesting idea. I'm going to kind of throw something back at you. Is that Patty, I think?
Mm-hmm.
I would really like to know if you know, how we can maybe the Ombudsman could be used to educate the consumers, to educate the consumers as to how to be engaged and involved in their nursing homes quality programs, you know. That was kind of my thinking. Now, I absolutely love the idea. The more people we can get involved in spreading the word and helping people make that shift in thinking, the better. And certainly we know that we have to get the providers to start that kind of thinking. But I also think it's important that we teach the consumers, you know, the educated consumer is going to be, you know, the more protected consumer, I think. You know, and how we can engage them and get them involved in the nursing home quality programs.
Yes, I agree. It's just that educating residents and families is just such a given that I didn't even mention it because.
Okay.
So that's why I was also asking about staff and what other ombudsmen think about that, or.
Well.
So, Louise, the other state ombudsman, what do you think?
Oh,
this is Victor from Delaware. But if the other concept is a given that, okay, the state ombudsman, you know, or the ombudsman will educate residents, you know, families, resident councils, family councils. But if there is a need, if there's a need that for a facility, you know, seeking assistance from the ombudsman, I think, you know, at that point, the ombudsman can reach out to Lori, reach out to CMS for additional tools in terms of, you know, how to deliver the appropriate training. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like partner, like our partner. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, Lori is just down the road, you know, if we can even, you know, tap into resources, you know, from Baltimore, CMS, you know, maybe there might be someone like a United Ways concept loan, their professional, you know, that, you know, can, you know, from a regional office that can, you know, I'm in Region 3. CMS has the Region 3 office in Philadelphia. So similarly, you know, if I need an assistance, you know, in a facility in Delaware here, I can always contact people in Region 3, you know, for someone to come down to Delaware. Just, you know, get on the train, come on down to Delaware. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Louise, did you have a comment?
Oh, just that, and I think Victor may have said it already, but I think to answer Patty's question, I think there's a role as it fits with culture change activities and educating providers on advancing excellence and introducing the tools, which I attempted to do at one time, you know, showing them where you can find tools on root cause analysis. And, you know, some of that is even in partnership with your QIO. I think there's opportunities that way, too. So, you know, I think it would seem that that would fall with, you know, within the kind of training of facility staff, which ombudsmen do. So,
yeah, this is Allison. I would just echo what you said that, you know, not only with the state survey agencies, but the ombudsman, the connection with the QIO, and someone else just mentioned Delaware. I know the Delaware QIO is doing a program on antipsychotics coming up. So, you know, there are opportunities there, and we're all trying to work together, Deb and the team here. We're working very closely with our QIO colleagues here. So, you guys just have lots and lots of really great ideas, and I think we'll look forward to hearing back about how some of these things work and share them back again through either this forum or other ways where we can share some best practices and the things that you all learn.
So this is Debbie. Is the training that you did in Texas, that's on your the website, correct? Did I just click on the link for slides? Is that the training that you did?
Mm-hmm.
Lori, is that right?
Yeah, that is it.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah, it is.
Awesome.
It's on the Ombudsman Resource Center website. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
great,
sorry, yeah.
Great. Mm-hmm. Okay. I can't wait to review them.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the Delaware QIO, we had a webinar at 11 o'clock this morning. CMS sponsored a webinar on reduction in antipsychotic medication, earlier today.
Very good.
Great. So we have just about 5 minutes left in the planned time for the call, and certainly this will not be the end of the conversation on this topic. We certainly will look to do other things and would welcome your feedback, State Ombudsman, on how you think we can be most helpful in supporting your programs. Also, I'd like you to think about what you think we can do to help you educate your local ombudsman about this topic. As I mentioned earlier, we wanted to start this just with you all as the process is beginning to roll out in the states, and wanted you to think about how your programs can be involved and what would make the most sense in terms of engaging your programs and your local ombudsman. There was a call in April of this year that CMS hosted with Rosalie Kane, where all of the locals were invited, and we had a good number participate on that call where they were given the primary overview, but it is time to do more as we're getting closer to rollout, and so would welcome your feedback on how we can help you do that. So any other last comments or questions before we close for the day? Okay, well, with that, I would like to thank Alice Bonner and the staff at CMS for joining us today, Debbie, Israel, and Kathy. We really appreciate you being part of this training with us. We have recorded the call, and we'll post it to the website and send it out to you all by email along with the link to where you can access the material so that you can listen again at your leisure. I know you'll all be doing it as you're, you know, driving home at night, right? Victor, I always love to get a laugh out of you. We'll look forward to hearing more from you about how we can assist in this process. So, Alice, thank you so much for the time you've taken to be with us this afternoon and to your staff. And with that, we'll close, and we'll look forward to talking to you all soon.
Great.
Thanks
a lot, Lori.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, buddy.
Thank you. Please stand by.